Today is May 2nd, 1984. My name is Tika Ward. I'm interviewing Susan Schwartz. We are at 3022 Vogue Avenue, Louisville, Kentucky. Our topic is Lou Tate and the Little Loom House. Susan, before we start on your memories of Lou Tate, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, I have my undergraduate degree from Washington University in St. Louis, and I have a degree in mathematics. And then I worked 3 years as a transportation planner for a regional planning agency in Louisville, and I went back to got my graduate school degree from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill in urban planning with a specialty in transportation and transit management. Presently, I'm working for the New York City Transit Authority as an associate transit management analyst, and I've been there for about the past 2 years.
New York must be very different from
Louisville. It's quite different. You come back to Louisville and things, it takes less time to get the same distance in Louisville. People are much friendlier in Louisville. It's been quite an experience of living in New York City. And while I've been there, I took a weaving course at the YWCA, and it was a course basically just teaching people to do basic things, and I hadn't woven in a few years, so it kind of recalled my memories of how to work, to do a warp, and just to do the different steps, and we worked on a four-hind loom. And the loom, it was strange because the loom I've always worked on is the little loom house loom, and this was a loom where you had to press pedals at the top and you didn't have the pedals at the bottom. So that was kind of an adjustment getting used to. The woman who taught it is a weaver, a woman who could be in her late 60s, 70s, and she's gone to study in Australia and is giving workshops all different places. And I asked her if she knew Lou Tate, and she said that she had never met Lou Tate personally, but a lot of her friends used to go to Lou Tate for the summer workshops that she had for like 2 or 3 weeks into weave. And then at the end of the class, I gave her a couple of little loom house books, which she was very pleased about because she collects, you know, different things with weaving.
Do you remember the first time you went to the loom house?
Yeah, the first time I went to the loom house was about 20 years ago. I was 11 years old then. And a friend of my family, B.B. Schwartz, had heard about the loom house from the Greenfields, who lived on Esplanade, which is down from the hill. And so one day, B.B. Schwartz and her daughter Harriet and my mother and I drove up to the little loom house. You know, and here was this three log cabins in the middle of these houses at the time worth about $60,000. And having grown, living in the suburbs, it was quite a shock to see this area. And then we adding on the two or three of the Paz girls who were around our age, and also Karen Lever. And for the next few years, we all basically went up weaving. And then in the end, I probably was basically the major one who ended up continuing weaving. And we used to go up there, and my mother would pay like 25 cents a day for me to weave. And also what the piece that you wove, Lou Tate would charge you by the inch. And I don't know if it was like 10 or 15 cents. It was really, really low. And I remember I worked on a two-harness looms then. I didn't do any four-harnesses until much later. And we would just basically do, you know, little doilies or little purses, or I did placemats. And then I remember there was always lots of children there when I used to go up to the loom house, and there was always like these demonstrations or open houses. And one time Lou Tate took a picture of us to show for the magazine, to show how you the steps of weaving and showing that children weave. And I think I'm in the picture where I was at the warping frame, and then another friend of mine was where you put the weaving onto the loom, and another one was showing, you know, the actual weaving. And the picture is supposedly still around. Like somebody told me the other day that there was just loads of copies of this picture, and it was in the Sunday magazine. And then I also remember when I used to go up there that Lou Tate had a dog, and the dog used to follow her everywhere that she went. And I had a dog named Alpha, and Alpha used to go up there, and like we would enter the Kenwood Hill, and she would go wild. She knew where she was going. She just loved the little loom house, and she used to follow Lou Tate's dog around, and Lou Tate liked my dog. And then later years, Alpha died, and we got another dog named Stooky, a Schnauzer, and Stooky went crazy over there. Was something about this place that like all these dogs loved. And then Lou Tate's dog died, I guess basically of old age. And then I also remember that two things that Lee Tate liked to push was, one was with color. She felt that this was a way that children could learn color much better than in school where, you know, you have a red square and you put it on this square. She felt this was the way that she discovered that a lot of kids learn color faster through her weaving, because she let them use pick out the colors that they wanted to weave. It was the child's choice. She felt that often in the school situation, they didn't let them use their imagination. And she also, her other big thing was, is having children teach other children to weave, and she would encourage that. And when I was in sixth grade, I remember she let me borrow one of her tables and looms, and I took the loom to my classroom, and then various throughout the day, I would show different kids in my class to weave, and then we weaved maybe a piece that was like 12 inches, and I might have it buried somewhere in my house. And then also, I guess Lee Tate did a lot for the state fair. She was like really, you know, into it, and I remember she decided that I should enter some pieces into the state fair. And one thing that I entered was a placemat that I had woven, a few placemats that my mother still has, into the state fair. And I think I got, I don't know, one thing I got honorable mention, and one I got first, and one I got second for. And I also did a little cocktail napkin, which she was like one of her big pieces, things that popular that she had people weave. And then I also entered this one that is still hanging in our kitchen that's like really creative, and I still am kind of amazed that I ever did it at the age of 11 or 12 years old. And I had to use the, put a pole through that you get to have the loops in the loom or on the piece. And Lou Tate let me borrow her loom to bring it home and to set up to do my weaving here. But for some reason she wouldn't lend me a table. So my brother in our basement, that we have a wooden table, he made some holes in the table and made strings so that they would connect to the loom. And I had these strings around my feet instead of weaving with the petals on the normal table. And how I ever wove, because it was such a pain, sometimes the things that turned out loose. But I entered it in the Kentucky Fair. And I think I got honorable mention in that. And then the other two pieces, the placemat and the cocktail napkin, I got first or second, and that was in the Girl Scout exhibit. I was a Girl Scout at the time. And she, back then, had different Girl Scouts coming, and I got the Girl Scouts had some, one of their badges was a weaving, and I ended up getting, I think as a Junior Scout and as a Cadet Scout, getting the badge for the weaving, doing the different things that you're supposed to do. When I was in eighth grade, I taught a Girl Scout troop how to do some weaving, but it was on a makeshift loom that was made on a cardboard, and they basically just did a little bookmark but showing how you could weave, and it was with a little metal thing that you attached to your yarn that Lou Tate, I guess, had sewed us, and you would weave on the loom. But when I used to go to the little loom house, most of the weaving that we did was outside the middle house. And I remember just going in there, and there'd just be piles and piles of papers and looms and weaving. And we would, when we'd come there, we would take our looms outside and we would do some weaving. And then at the end of the day, we would put our looms back. And I remember Lou Tate always would talk a lot about the fact when Eleanor Roosevelt visited her house. And she would show us her picture. It was kind of, you know, it was interesting. And then in the winter, we would do weaving up in the top house, which is completely different now than it used to be, where it had all the different, I guess, four or five little broken rooms up there, and would do some weaving. And I also remember when Lou Tate would have us, for putting the thread, we'd take some yarn or some thread, and we would have to wind it up on the little bobbins up at the top of the hill. I also remember just a lot of little demonstrations that would occur while I was there. And one time, when part of the city's arts program, Lou Tate had an exhibit, a demonstration in Stewart's. And I remember as a child going there, and you know, people who were coming through the store, and I would have to show them how to do some weaving. And I think one time I also went out to Farmington for her and did some weaving there. As I became older, I didn't really go to the loom house, but we thought about it a lot, and every so often we would go, or I would start doing some weaving. And one time Lee Tate started showing me how to use a four harness loom and how to interpret the patterns on a coverlet, and to figure out how you could figure out, you know, which feet you should weave on to figure out the patterns and the different things. And she would talk about the drafts of the patterns and would tell some history, like one pattern some lovers got a copy of it and sent it to his girlfriend in either the late 1700s or the early 1800s. Then one time I hadn't gone there for a while, and all of a sudden we get a telephone call from Rita Tate. And somebody, I was about 15 or 16 years old, and some woman had a loom that she had bought in the 1950s, and she wanted to sell it. And Rita Tate wanted to know if I wanted to buy the table, the bench, the warping frame, and the loom for a total of $48. So we went up there and we decided we were going to go buy this loom because we always had wanted a loom. And so my brother ended up cleaning up the loom, and we got some new pieces for the loom, for the threads to go through and stuff, and set up the loom. And then I started, you know, taking maybe some more classes until I went to college. But then after college, I ended up coming back to the little loom house and doing, you know, doing some more weaving on some coverlet patterns. And I remember one Christmas and Hanukkah, I ended up making like little big placements, single ones for a lot of presents for family, friends, and everybody was excited, this handmade present. And then also I remember one time when there was, in the summer, there was an open house, and there was a father priest who came, and he taught spinning. It was the first time I ever spun, and it was hysterical because my threads would either break off or they would be too lumped together as I was spinning. Then there was another woman who was teaching where you tie the loom to the tree, and you do, I don't know if it's called backstrap weaving, and she would do it. And then there were some other times where people would be out there and they would teach vegetable dye.
And this would be one of the open houses?
Yeah, one of the open houses or some workshop that she was having for the day at the loom house.
Did you ever see, I heard there were sheep, and they would shear the sheep.
No, I never saw any sheep when I was there. But I remember people doing, you know, carding the wool and different kinds of wool. And I remember I had my schnauzer, and my mother used to, every, like, in the summer, would have my dog clipped. I guess it was about twice a year. And I remember one time Lute saying, well, you should even save the fur from the dog. I don't know if my mother ever did, but Lute used to tell her she should do that.
Tell me some more about her technique of teaching weaving. And
well, the part of Lute's technique of weaving, especially when I was into the four harness loom, more so than as the two harness loom as a child, her emphasis, a lot of it dealt with the history of the particular coverlet. I remember she used to show us, you know, coverlets, and she would tell us a little history about, you know, where it was from, when it was done, maybe even what family, the reasons for maybe the pattern. And she would also, you know, she would try to teach us how to interpret the particular coverlet. And I guess a lot of her looms she set up, she interpreted herself and then set up the looms where you could make a doily, a small piece, instead of doing this gigantic. And maybe it would just be one piece. Maybe there were several patterns in the loom for a big loom that the coverlet had been done on. And, you know, she would interpret one little section and, you know, and would set up the looms and would also try to have us learn how you could figure out what the pattern was and which particular petals you could do it on. And she would always, you know, talk about the history, you know, where did it come from and stuff like that. And I think that was a big part of her emphasis, I think, was also just the fact that this was part of history. Lou Tate had a history degree. One time when my mother and I were up there helping us clean the house that she lived in, we happened to find her diploma from 1929, and she told us to throw it away, but we didn't throw it away. We just put it back where we got it. So who knows what, you know, what happened to it? And it was a degree, I think, from the University of Michigan.
So you knew that she had this background of education.
Oh right, I mean that, you know, she definitely did.
Did she ever talk to you about her forays on horseback into the woods anywhere, recovering some of these drafts or something?
No, she never told me about that. I remember, though, she would say some things that if people happened to hear about her, they would bring her coverlets to her and have her interpret the patterns, and then maybe eventually she would take them back. But I never really heard stories about it. She used to talk more about, you know, her different her coverlets, where she would have her M's and her O's and her algebraic, you know, expressions. And I guess she really would tell me a lot about that because my degree was in mathematics, and so she felt, well, from the mathematical standpoint, this is what we're doing, you know, and this is what, you know, the meaning is, but we're doing it, we're relating it to weaving.
As she taught, she enjoyed teaching young people?
She definitely did. I think children were like one of the important things to her, and she had, you know, there was something about her that she seemed to be just enthrilled with or something. I remember when the homes were made a national landmark, and there were like all these signatures. So there was Mayor Sloan's wife, Kathy Sloan, like Miss Oley might have been here, and David Banks was there, and several other people. And I remember when they, you know, put the plaque on the house and stuff. And Lee Tate, in some ways, was kind of very shy. You know, she didn't want the appearance. But at the particular presentation of it, there were some children there. And you could tell that, to her, she would smile the most when she was with the children, or when the children came over to her. She seemed to be the most comfortable in that kind of situation. So it was always interesting to do that. She just had such an effect on children. And, you know, that was an important thing to her.
Did the other children seem to respond to her?
I think most children did. You know, I think once in a while she would mention about that some children were maybe problems, but then a lot of times she would say, you know, it's like the teachers don't let them have the imagination, and so, you know, we're stuck there. She kind of let them do what they wanted to when it came to the weaving, let them pick out the colors that they wanted to, and, you know, she said maybe we thought it was ugly, but, you know, if that's what the kid wanted, that was the important thing, you know, to her.
You said you did most of the weaving outside.
A lot of it was done outside, especially probably when I went, it was mainly, you know, in the summers with the good weather. There was a few winters I went, and remember being a little bit on the cold side in the top house.
Oh, right.
Yes.
And you would do weaving up there.
I would do weaving up there I would probably go on a Saturday or a Sunday, and I would do the weaving up there, and she would be up there all day and stuff.
And then Wisteria, the middle cabin, is where she housed the looms.
Right. And when we used to do the weaving outside, when I was younger is when I remember doing more outside, is that looms would be kept inside there, and at the end of the day we would have to take the looms back into Wisteria, and we would get the yarns and stuff. And she always had piles on. She would have little boxes, and she would have like shuttles with thread made up of all the different colors. So a lot of times she didn't have to worry about, you know, putting it on yourself. It was ready. All you had to do as a child is you would just go over there and you would pick whatever colors you wanted, whatever thickness. And so, you know, you would pick out what you wanted, and, you know, for the different shuttles, and then you would go out and you would weave. And, you know, usually you would have maybe some flexibility in what you wanted. And I remember some looms were, one of her big things was the rainbow colors. It was reds, blues, yellows, and greens, you know. And I guess a lot of kids, you know, you tend to pick up that. And I, you know, different things that she would teach along the way. You know, first it would be very simple, and then as you got knew a little bit more, maybe you would do something fancy. And oh, she also had a certain technique of weaving. The way you had to weave, you would put your thread through, and then you would hit once, then you would change your feet, and you would hit twice, and then you would put it back through, you would hit once, change your feet, and hit twice. And she was like really particular that you did the weaving that way. You know, you couldn't do it any other way.
Did she explain to you why to do it that way?
Well, I guess part of it was just maybe to make the tightness and stuff, but that was, you know, she was really stuck on that was the way you had to do it, you know.
She herself had worked with the Girl Scouts. When you were a Girl Scout, did she
ever
tell you about
that? Yeah, she had just mentioned that she had worked, you know, I guess some with the Girl Scouts, or that she had Girl Scouts coming up there. Other things I really, you know, don't remember.
Were you a member of the Kentucky Weavers Junior?
I was a member of the Kentucky Weavers Junior.
Were you a founding member?
No, I don't think I go back that far. but I think a membership was only $1 at the time for children, you know. And she used to send us out things in the mail, you know, announcements on what was going on. And sometimes she would scribble things, and sometimes you weren't quite sure. She would say, there's an open house, and then she would start telling you about different things of weaving, you know. And I guess at that time we didn't always really appreciate, you know, maybe all the knowledge that she had. But, you know, it was always kind of interesting. And she was also kind of a colorful person because she had her short hair, and she would wear pants, and then she would also wear these dresses. And sometimes her dresses maybe would be a little drab color, but her dresses would have the pockets, would be woven pieces of different patterns on it. And she also used to go around wearing booties, and she would walk on the grass and the rocks with her booties, you know. Didn't really matter what the weather was. I really don't know how many times I ever saw her in shoes. It was mainly in booties. A few times, you know, I think we asked her what she wanted, you know, once we gave her something for Christmas, and she told my mother she needed some more booties, so she bought some colorful booties for her to wear and stuff. And also, I remember she, she was interesting in that wherever she went, you know, I guess her big thing was weaving. And there was one time in her later years that she was in a nursing home. We hadn't been up there for a while, and we went up to the Lynn house, and somebody told us she was in this nursing home. So we drove over there right away, and she was there, and she was basically doing okay. But she was teaching the senior citizens there how to weave. And then after she went back to her house, she still continued to teach, you know, had dealings with the senior citizens and teaching them how to weave. I think she also used to read a lot, because she was always taking books back to the library. And then one time, I also remember, I was in maybe high school, but going to the neighborhood library there and also helping her teach some people how to weave at the library. So it was like, it was always, everything had to deal with weaving that she did.
Did you ever go into Bottom House, also called the Little Loom House itself?
The one she also called Esta? Yeah, right. Well, it wasn't until later years that I entered the thing more of the kitchen. And one winter, my mother and I went there and stuffed envelopes. So she didn't have really heat there. I don't know what kind of heat. She had basically stove or what to help her insulate the house, and we would stuff all these envelopes. And that was the time we found the diploma, her graduate school diploma, and we stuffed through the house, and we would find, like, there's like all kinds of stuff. And then also I helped to put plastic on the windows. And then I guess she was finally going to get it. Somebody was helping her get some kind of heater for her apartment. And she also had, she also used to always talk about the squirrels that would basically live in her house, or she would discover them on her bed. And her house was also piled with just all kinds of stuff that, you know, it was unbelievable. And there was one time I went there, and with her I went out to I think, the garage. And how I even got in there is amazing. I'm not even quite sure, because there was just all kinds of stuff all over the place. And I had to wrap material around her. That was when she was starting to, like, not feeling as well and stuff. And I wrapped the pipes up for her, and then she had me fill the oil and take it up to the top house and pour the oil into the thin stove, which I never did. And, you know, I'm thinking, you know, here I am in the middle of Louisville, and I'm putting oil into this house, and I'm putting plastic on these windows. And then also I remember there was a jar, and an outside jar. I never used it myself. I would always make sure I didn't have to go to the bathroom. When I would go up there, and I had to put toilet paper there for when the kids came. The toilet paper. Oh, and then also I remember when we used to go up there, she used to have, maybe Kool-Aid a lot of times for kids to drink, or bug juice. I'm not quite sure, remember what she called it, but there would be and there would maybe be also cookies and stuff there. We never really understood her financial situation, you know. Sometimes she would complain about the money, or later on the fact that she wanted to leave the Loom House, you know, to the people. And, you know, she wanted to get more money, you know. And I guess one thing that was kind of amazing, though, was that, you know, as a child, we barely paid anything. There would be all these kids there, and it was probably, you know, real cheap for the parents to take them up there and drop them off for the afternoon and stuff. And then she would always talk about going to the bank. And, you know, I personally, as a child or whatever, never really quite understood what was going on, you know. I knew that her parents had gotten her the cabins or whatever. And then I remember at one point when I was older, I guess I was out of college and I was working in Louisville for a while, she was talking about she needed more money. So I wrote over 20 letters to the governor's wife, to some different historical groups in Louisville, to David Banks, I know he's done a lot, to Mazzoli. I think I even wrote a letter to the president at that time, you know, saying, you know, about this historical, and I mentioned Eleanor Roosevelt had visited there, and how this woman is a historian. And she did get some, I did get some, you know, answers back and stuff like that. And then shortly later was when the place was made a historical home. Now, whether my letters ever had any effect, I don't know, but I mean, I remember Lou Tate was real pleased that I was sending out these letters to these people. And I didn't have a typewriter, so I was handwriting all my letters to all these different people and stuff.
Did you ever meet anyone in her family?
No, I never, not that I remember, did I ever meet anybody in her family. I used to maybe hear things about her family. I don't really remember things about her family.
When you first started going there, was she living there all the time? Or was she
Yeah, she was still, when I first started, when I was 11, she was living there all the time with her dog. She and her dog were living there, you know. And we were just amazed at this place that she had. I remember one time when I was older and I was doing some weaving on some coverlet, and every so often she would just have people kind of drop in out of the blue, you know, where they found out about this place. And this one woman who was maybe in her 20s came up one day, and she was talking to a lady, and she was more into, let's say, the modern weaving. And, you know, she was kind of interested in the plays and stuff, but it was kind of, you could kind of see a little bit of a clash, because Lou Tate was really into the history of coverlets and weaving coverlets and the traditional weaving, because she felt we need to learn to carry this on. And she didn't really seem so interested in this woman who, you know, was up there into the modern weaving.
Do you think the woman realized that?
I'm not really sure if the woman did, but, you know, having been up there for a long time, going throughout the time up there, you know, I could tell.
You knew her.
I knew her. Yeah, so I could see a little bit maybe of a stubborn streak or something in her, you know, coming out.
Do you think that she, in terms of the little loom, do you think she credited herself with helping that happen?
Oh, I think she definitely did. I mean, you know, she used to talk about how the little loom that we wove on, you know, I guess she designed, or that she had a big effect on. And I think she felt that she had a, you know, a big effect on weaving in the state of Kentucky, and that people knew her internationally. And, you know,
do you recall her going out of the state to conventions or weaving exhibitions?
I remember really hearing more from her about going places and about workshops than remembering her. I just always remembered her there. But I mean, I would hear every so often, you know, that she had done such and such, or gone to such and such place. I kind of thought it was more of a fixture there.
Yes, I'm sure that's true. I also wanted to ask you, what do you remember most clearly about Lou Tate?
Probably one was the cabin and the woods, and that, you know, she just seemed like she'd been in there. And I think the fact that she was so into weaving, and, you know, weaving was her life, and that she wanted to teach children. She wanted to teach children to teach children to weave, and, you know, that colors were important, and that anybody in their, you know, in their own way could be creative. That, you know, you didn't have to be an artist, but that some way you could have your own creativity and use your own imagination in the weaving.
When she was in the nursing home, did she seem... She was carrying on her weaving, as you said.
Yeah, she was teaching. She was teaching some of the senior citizens at the nursing home to do some weaving. You know, kind of like it was just always.
Did she have a little loom with her?
I think there was one. I think we just saw the room, but she was talking to us about how she was doing it. We didn't really see her doing it. And then I know later on that she went back there to do some weaving.
Although she wasn't sick.
Yeah, when she wasn't, or she wasn't sick where she had to be in the nursing home, because later on I think she was sick. And you could tell, you know, you could notice that she was maybe slowing down, you know, as she got older.
Who would take care of the little loom house when she was gone?
I don't know. I think it wasn't really open. And I'm not sure, the day we went there, maybe there had been somebody there. That was how we found out, or maybe it was from a neighbor we found out. But the place was basically not open at that time when she was sick.
What kind of a kitchen did she have?
Oh, her kitchen. See, she had a little refrigerator. It was also real grungy. and a little sink. And it was crowded. It had weaving stuff in her kitchen, you know, and boxes and boxes of threads or looms were in the kitchen. It was kind of like just the looms had taken over the house and stuff. Now, I never made it to the upstairs part of her house. I only saw her bedroom living room. And her bed that was by the window, that's supposedly the squirrels used to visit. And I saw the kitchen, the bathroom, but I never saw anything else in the house. And the garage I saw when I did the pipes. And everywhere you looked, there was always limbs. There was no part of those cabins that you didn't know that weaving was part of it.
And then in Wisteria was more storage, as you said.
Yeah, in Wisteria, it was like all over the place. There was storage and stuff, but it was kind of like, I think she knew where some things were. You know, we might not know where they are, but I think she had an idea, and she knew what every loom was supposed to be done, and she sometimes even remembered what pieces she did, and she would always make sure. She also had a certain technique that, that was interesting, when it came to warping the looms, you know, she had, you know, you would use, she would save the magazines from the newspaper, and that was what the things were warped with. But I think the last two when you were finishing the warp, were all, I think they had cartooned. There was something distinguished about them. She said, you have to have that so you know you're coming to the end. And then also, whenever you put your name at the end of the day when you left and you put your name on it, you had to put a piece of paper and a pen. But what you did, she said, is you put it underneath. That way, when the next person leaves, your name won't get lost. Whereas if you put it on the top, she says, well, something could hit it off, and then you wouldn't know which piece was yours.
This is the end of side one. This is the beginning of side two, and Susan Schwartz and I are continuing our conversation on Lou Tate and the Little Loom House.
Getting back to the financial situation, she always used to talk about, I guess, just organization, that she wanted people to help her, and she also talked, I guess, about some of the different women's groups in the churches, and some of them would get up and she wanted organization. And my mother and I would say, you know, we want to do something, you know, and maybe there would be a meeting, but then we would never hear anything about it for a while. You know, it wasn't, I guess, until later on, until after she died, that, you know, the organization was formed, and my mother started becoming more active. But years ago, when Lou Tate was alive, you know, she wanted to do a lot more, and I was, you know, willing to do more. And that was, I guess, part of the reason that I wrote those letters at the time. And at least we were happy when it was made a historical home.
Did you go to the ceremony?
I was there. It was interesting. I guess it was different people, but brought cookies and stuff, and there were all these dignitaries that were there. There was Kathy Sloan was there, and David Banks was there, and people were showing, you know, demonstrations on how to weave, and Lou Tate was there, and Lou Tate was dressed as normally. You know, most people would get real dressed up, and she had her dress on with, and I have pictures of it. I have some slides of it. And she would, it had the woven pockets on her dress, and as I think I mentioned earlier, it's kind of like she was kind of shy about being out in the open. She was proud that it was being made a historical place, but, you know, she kind of didn't want to be out in the front. But then there were some children there, and she was like, you know, that was what you could tell she was the happiest with, was those children. And so we were glad that it was made a historical place and that it would be permanent.
That was shortly before she died.
Right. And then for a while, maybe we went back up there a few more times, and then we didn't hear anything for a while, and I probably got busy with my job or whatever. And then all of a sudden, somehow or another, my mother had heard that she died. And then we heard something in the paper. And then I don't know if she ended up contacting somebody, you know, that we knew and said that, you know, we wanted to do something to make that place, you know, a lasting place, you know, in Kentucky. And
What do you remember most clearly about Lou Tate as you look back on your weaving experiences? And
most clear, well, one thing is Lou Tate took a liking to us, which was kind of, you know, I guess certain people, she decided that, you know, she really liked, I mean, she liked children, but she kind of she took a liking to us. And I mean, the fact that, you know, she caught us after a few years and told us that there was this loom for $48, or this whole set of the equipment with the loom, and the fact, I think she was kind of like enthralled that, you know, we came from the East End all the way out to Kenwood Hill, and that we would drive the distance to go there. And I kind of remember that. I also remember a little bit that, you know, she would mention, I guess we were kind of like the representatives of the Jewish community that, you know, would come to the Little Loom House. And I don't know, she was just kind of really an interesting woman. It was just like her, just the amount that she knew. And I guess it was, you know, a satisfaction that when I was out there weaving that I could make something, and, you know, I would give them away as presents, or I would give them to different things, different people that I knew. And she would, you know, she would help. I remember teaching me how to warp, which I still don't like to do by myself. But, you know, everything she had a certain technique for the basic. Now, when it came to the actual weaving, that was up to you to do what you wanted to. But when it came up to warping the loom, and it came to beading the thread, she had a certain technique that was important that you did. But then after that, your creativity was you could do what you wanted to do. And I guess also what was important was just the coverlets. Like, I mean, I go to historical places. I've lived in different places, or I've traveled a lot. I've traveled to Europe. I've been to Russia. And it's just like I'm always thrilled whenever I see coverlets or I see woven pieces other places. You know, I always find it interesting. And I also think back to, you know, Lou Tate, who I knew. different places I'll go, is I'll ask people, you know, do you know Lou Tate? And, you know, sometimes she'll know. The older people will definitely know. The younger people, not always. And I think that that's one of the things that's kind of interesting. Also, wonder if I'm someplace and there happens to be a guide, I'll always ask them, you know, what is this pattern? Or I'll try to find out what is the history, you know. And I guess I basically think back to when Lou Tate would say, well, this is the pattern and this is the history. You know, some man found it for his lover in the 1812 war or something. Or, you know, and I guess, you know, she has a kind of a lasting effect. And even when you go up there now, you kind of think, you know, you always think of Lou Tate. You don't think of just the Lehm House. When I visit there, you know, you still kind of feel like she's around. I remember it, I guess, as a child and even later on going there, and she would always have these cobwebs, and, you know, she always had little, I never made one, but she would have little children make them, and I guess she would have the little trees, the branches, and then they would put the little cob or spider web on, and she would always talk about them to the little kids. And also, you know, to her, nature was a really big thing, and, you know, some of her demonstrations, she would have people doing vegetable dyeing and spinning and the actual carding. Then I also remember she would have us even doing some weaving, where we would put in little sticks or we would put in some little wild plants into them. And, you know, that was kind of, you know, she thought that was part of it. And I think that was another lasting effect on the little Lehm House, just the fact that nature was involved.
You mean real sticks? And real flowers?
Well, real sticks or maybe things from wild plants. Not so much the flowers, but wild plants, putting them in there and stuff.
In the weaving.
In the weaving piece, the actual weaving piece that we did. And I also remember another thing when she taught us, when you have a little doily, and if you have fringe on your doily, you know, she also had a certain technique that you would put a little cardboard about an inch wide, and you would put it in, and then the next piece you make another one, and you had to make sure, you know, you would press between the two cardboards. And then also one time she showed me how to do some kind of trim so that the threads wouldn't come out because of that lace being there. So it was always an interesting place to go to. I mean, it was always like there was something new that you would learn each time you went there to visit the Lehm House. And then another thing was recently my brother was in town, and my brother never was a weaver, but I mean, he did things like fixing up my loom, or my mother sometimes would take him up there. And recently she took him up there to ask him to do some kind of like minor repair, because he's very handy at that. And several years ago, my nephew, maybe when he was 2 or 3, went up there, you know, and we tried to get him to weep, but of course, you know, the kid was too young. But when he was here this time, my mother said, Michael said to her, he says, I want to go to the Lehm House. So my brother went up there, and my nephew, and I guess my sister-in-law went up there. And I guess in a sense, it's kind of like that there's some kind of spirit around there for children, you know, and for all children, this natural setting and all these little colorful weavings. And
so she lives on, really.
Yeah. When I was in college, I still did, I guess, some weaving, you know, on and off. And one summer, I decided I was going to have a room with a window seat. I was getting into the high-rise dorm. So she helped me work my loom, and I made a pillow for my window seat. And this thing was so long, and one side I had one design, and the other side I had another design. And then a friend of my mother's, my mother sewed it, and her friend helped her put the pillow, like this big foam pillow, in it. Then another time I remember I made a vest, and Lou Tate helped me set up the loom for the vest. It was a green, it had different shades of green in it. And I made these two long strips, like, who knows how, real long strips, and then I sewed them at the edge, you know, I guess the seams around the arms and also in the back together. But I remember the one thing is that she should have told me is instead of having two long pieces, that I should have had four pieces, because it ended up my wore it after a while was kind of like stretching so long, and to kind of fit it, you know, it would have been better with the four things. But I guess she used to talk about, you know, people making clothes, you know, doing weaving, or, you know, she would have some things, I guess, that she had woven, some types of clothes that she had.
And then it seems to me Ann Kuiper's mother is pictured in a wedding dress, which she herself wove.
Yeah, and I've seen it, but I've never done it. I think also Lou Tate, there was like so many things that she wanted to do that she never was able to get to everything that she wanted to do, because I remember when my brother got married, she told my mother she wanted to make a little net, I think the little linen towels for him, and put their initials in it, but it was kind of like, I think that was when she was started to become ill, and also she just had so much to do that it probably would have been 5 years, you know, down the road that she would finally have done it. She would have done it. But, you know, there's just so much that she was always doing and so many projects. Because a lot of times when we would up there, you know, she would help us. But she would also do her own weaving, where she would be working away too. And her dog would be, when the dog was alive, would be sitting at her feet as she was weaving.
Where did she keep her coverlets? Downstairs in the bottom house?
They might have been like all over the place. Some of them were downstairs and some of them were upstairs, and then there might have been some in the middle and stuff. And some of them were on loan. Some of them weren't hers. They were on loan. But they just seemed like they were everywhere. And some of them were like, some were in beautiful condition, and there were some I remember that were in really bad condition, but she could still figure out what that pattern was, you know, and the history behind it. I guess one of the things that I mentioned most about Yvu Tate is that she was just so unique, and she was so different and so unusual, and she was, you know, she was just really into this. You know, this was basically her life, was weaving and teaching children and wanting to carry on this craft so it didn't die, you know, the craft didn't die and didn't leave Kentucky.